For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Is that the most well-known verse in the Bible? Well, how does it begin? It begins with God, for God so loved. Do you ever think about God? Have you ever met God? Would you like to meet a man who has? His name is Job. And the book of Job in the Bible, it records his meeting with God. And Job speaks to God, and God speaks to Job. And when you look at God's words to Job, God could have been speaking to Richard Dawkins, the Archbishop of Canterbury, or to you and me. So what does God say to Job and to us? Well, we've only a very limited amount of time, so just time for a soundbite. Now, if you read the book of Job, Job, if you like, has filled the book with questions for God. So when they finally meet, God says to Job, okay, you've had lots of questions for me. It's time for me, Job, to question you. And listen to some of his questions. He says to Job, where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurements? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Did you hear that? Says God, who am I? Then just look around you. I'm the great architect, the master builder. And God speaks of foundations and measuring lines and cornerstones. It's God who's designed and built the world. And just look at his genius. If you built a house, what foundations would you choose? And how far down would you dig? But look at the foundations that God chooses for his house. We're told in Job that he hangs the earth on nothing. Just a planet surrounded by space. And when he built this world, we read that the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Do you see, when God built the earth, it wasn't the wearisome toil of millions of years. It was an exuberant burst of creative energy. He's the strong man building his house. So much so that the angels, they provide the soundtrack. The morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. A heavenly host praising God. Where else have you heard that? And having built his house, what do we read of next? Well, we read of God's firstborn. He goes on and says to Job, or who shut in the sea with doors when it burst forth and issued from the womb? When I made the clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band. Now, it's beautiful poetry. But says God, when the sea was born, it was like a newborn baby wrapped in a blanket of clouds and darkness. Think of it. In God's eyes, the primeval ocean was like a newborn baby wrapped in swaddling cloths. Where else have you heard that? And yet more questions for Job. Have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place? Why did the sun rise this morning? Was it simply because the earth rotates on its axis? The coming of the dawn was at God's command. Yes, the earth rotates on its axis, but only because God wills it. And as the dawn comes, what happens to the earth? It takes on form like clay under a seal and stands out like a garment. Have you ever watched the breaking of the dawn? I remember my student days in Southampton, we drive out to the New Forest in time for the sunrise, and we find a high wall, and there you would sit and you'd watch. And with the coming of the light, everything becomes clear. And that shadowy form, it now has shape. And when you look at it, it becomes clearer and clearer. And you can see it's a farmhouse. And that vague blur over there as you watch and as the dawn comes, so you realize that it's an oak tree, great oak tree standing alone. And the blacks and the greys before the dawn, they're now turning to color. Do you see? It takes on the form, the day takes on form like clay under a seal and stands out like a garment. With the coming of the dawn, everything becomes clearer. It's like clay taking on a shape under a mold or a seal. And the colors, they become stronger and more vivid. They stand out like a garment, like clothing. It takes on form like clay under a seal and stands out like a garment. Do you see? With the coming of the new day, so God takes the earth and like fresh clay, he presses it into the shapes of the dawn. Shapes which become harder and clearer as the sun rises. And with the coming of the light, so God, as it were, he dyes the fabrics of the world with the blues and the golds and the reds of the new day. My friend, every dawn you're exposed to the creative genius of God. But there's more on display than just God's greatness. Says God to Job, witness my goodness. He says, have you commanded the morning since your days began and caused the dawn to know its place, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it? Do you see? God's ordering of his universe is moral. The wicked love the night. This may be your experience. I go to bed to a clean wall, and when I wake up in the morning, it's got graffiti all over it. The night, the darkness. People love the darkness, don't they? We all have our guilty secrets. We all have things that we like to keep in the dark, that we don't want others to know about, least of all God himself. Although, of course, God always sees. Nighttime is the time for drunkenness and drugs and violence and getting into bed with somebody else and theft and rape and murder. But the coming of the dawn maintains some sort of moral order. The light cuts short people's sin and they scurry home as the dawn comes, that it might take hold of the ends of the earth and the wicked be shaken out of it. It's very vivid, isn't it? When the dawn comes, it's like a rug or a blanket which is shaken, and all the wicked are tipped out of it and run to their homes. Did you thank God for the dawn this morning? What might have happened if the dawn had never come? And so the conversation goes on. And you begin to realize in this conversation between God and Job and the things that God has to say to Job and the questions which he puts to Job, you begin to realize just how big God is. And God confronts Job and Dawkins and the Archbishop of Canterbury and you and me with a vision of his all-surpassing majesty and his unutterable glory. And I begin to realize that I will never think great thoughts until I think of God. When was the last time you were stilled by the thought of God? My last thought at night. My waking thought. The thought that keeps me awake. What's more, as God speaks of his creation, it becomes clear that he's talking about something which for him is very ordinary. Well, if when we witness the creation, we're witnessing God's ordinary works, then what is God's extraordinary works? If these things, if you like, reveal the domestic side of his godness, what is it that reveals the true dimensions of God's godness? What is God's ultimate work? Maybe now you'll begin to see why this is a Christmas Day message. There was a new principal of a theological college. And so that everyone would understand the sort of man that he was, He told them of the defining moment in his life, the untimely death of his son. As if to say, if you want to know who I am, if you want to know what makes me tick, then understand that I am the father who lost his son. Do you see? You will never know who God really is, what kind of God he is. You will never see his true greatness or understand his true glory until you come to see that this is the God who gave his son to the death of the cross. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten son, that whoever believes in him should not perish, but have everlasting life. Do you see? A day came when at the birth of Jesus, the morning stars, the angels, sang together, and all the sons of God shouted for joy. Glory to God in the highest, and on earth peace, goodwill toward men. And it was God's Son who was that newborn baby, wrapped in swaddling cloths and lying in a manger. And as the dawn broke, so the shepherds returned, glorifying God and praising him for all the things that they had heard and seen. And if the angels blinked with astonishment to see their Maker lying in a manger, what did they think to see the only begotten Son nailed to a cross and to witness the drops of his agony? For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. And on this Christmas morning, God has a question for you. He asks us all. He says, do you know who I am? Do you know what makes me tick? I'm the God, I'm the Father, who gave his only Son to the death of the cross. And why? It was to save guilty people like you, to rescue them from their sins and from death and from hell. And he says, this morning I've given you another day. It will not always be so, but today another day. You've lived to see a new dawn. And God in his word says, I stretch out my hands to you. Look for me. Seek me. Look to me. Find me. Meet with me. Know me. Obey me. Love me. Enjoy me. Serve me. Be mine. Come to me through my Son. There is no other way. Will you? Today, I gave my Son to die the punishing death that sinners deserve to die, so that whoever trusts in him, whoever believes in him, should not perish, but have everlasting life. Did you hear that? Most people just exist. Jesus Christ alone can give to us life. Do you know it? For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son. And that, ladies and gentlemen, young people, boys and girls, is the good news this Christmas day.